When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
You're listening to the ESPN Footy Podcast.
G'day guys, welcome back to Red Time for another episode. I'm your host, Jared Barker, and I'm joined by ESPN's Jake Michaels. Jake, welcome. Round one tonight. Officially though, this time.
It's good. I was talking with Christian Jolly about this, who everyone will know from Tuesday's episode, and he is just furious that of the naming conventions with the rounds now. So opening round and then round one, it just throws everything off for them. So now round one is round two, and it's just all a massive nightmare. So excited to have all the teams playing, because I think that was a big issue last week, a little bit of fairness and equality with only eight teams and four games. So good to have everyone playing again and get back to a more traditional style of football.
Indeed, we are looking forward to it. There are plenty of topics for us to get through today, so we're going to get stuck straight into it. We're going to start with Collingwood, the reigning premiers. Jake, are the premiership hangover talks real if the Pies lose to the Swans on Friday night and go 0-2?
Well, it's very likely that they do. I'm not sure which way I'm going to go with that game as yet, but I think either way, the premiership hangover talks, we need to pump the brakes on it just a touch. There's always going to be overreactions no matter what happens in football, but I think the way in which Collingwood lost the game, I don't think it was disgraceful. They did not disgrace themselves against the Giants. The Giants are a very good football team. Most people think they're going to be a lock for the top four this year.
Best team in the competition.
Well, you think that?
Yeah, I've been saying it whole preseason. They just lost to a better team.
So if they're the best team in the competition, how can we then say, oh, Collingwood's all over the shop and they're in the midst of a premiership hangover when they've lost to the best team in the competition?
It's too early now, but if they do lose to the Swans, I mean, does it give you any reason to suggest they're not playing finals?
If they lose to the Swans, then I think we all... It depends on how the game plays out, but I think we need to then reassess the Swans, because I think you go back a week ago, I think most people were probably leaning towards Melbourne in that game, given the midfield injuries with Sydney. They look really good, the Swans. They were able to cover those holes with other players that we're going to speak about a little bit later. If they go and beat Collingwood again and look really good once more, then I think all of a sudden you'll say, well, the Giants, you just said, best team in the comp. Everyone thinks they're going to be top four. Yep. Sydney, they'll be 2-0, and people will start saying a similar thing. Well, they should be playing finals, and could they be a top four side? So it's not like they're losing to two very ordinary sides and playing bad football. You know, they lost by 32 to the Giants, but they really, I know people laugh at expected scores, but it's a very good metric, and it shows how the game was actually played.
It shows you that they had opportunities.
They had a massive amount of opportunities, and the expected scores will say they should have won that game by 15 points. Now, they lost by 32, and that 47-point differential, well, that's the sixth greatest number ever recorded.
Yep.
So it's such an out-of-the-box game. If that exact game is played again, but the actual shots on goal were a little different, Collingwood could easily have won that game. Or if they only lose by 9 points, I don't think people are sounding the alarm bells.
No, that's taking nothing away from GWS, though, who were terrific going the other way in transition. They just looked very, very slick. And I think it goes back to what you said. It's the way that they lose on Friday night. If they are to be defeated, that's going to tell us a lot about them. But I think after two games, it's more, let's assess the way that they're playing. Yep. Let's not sound the alarm bells. You look at, since the year 2000, so this century, teams that start 0-2, there's been 117 of those teams. 96 of them have missed out on finals, and none of them have won a flag. So they are damning stats.
Yeah, they are. That is quite surprising, just given two games. So you do want to win one of those first two, no doubt.
But the reality, they will have lost to two very good teams, as you said.
Yeah, and you don't know if that's always the case. So I'm not sounding the alarms as yet, but if you do look ahead, and I'm sure Collingwood fans like yourself have probably looked ahead through the next sort of month or so in the fixture, it's not easy.
It's a tough run.
So after this week, it's St Kilda, which might be the easiest week for the next six. You got the Lions at the Gabba. Hawthorn will be a gather-round neutral site game.
Who beat Collingwood last year.
Smashed them. Then the bye, then Port, then Essendon on Anzac Day, and then Carlton. So there's not many, you know, you look through and you include GWS and Sydney as well. You look through those first 8 or 9 games. There's not many, as good as Collingwood are, and we know them that they were last year, there's not many games you look at and say, they should win that, they should win that, they'll win that. Mm. So, yeah, I'm not sounding the alarm bells at all. I think Collingwood will still be a top four side this year, but yeah, would want to get on the board pretty early, I reckon.
0-2, not doom and gloom, but if they lose to the Saints the week after and go 0-3, let's sound the alarm bells then, I think.
Fair enough. Harry Mackay played a starring role last week for the Blues, and he'll be in action tonight against Richmond. So if you're tuning in after that, apologies. Are you convinced he's turned the corner with his goal kicking?
No. I don't think there's a corner for him to be turned.
You're a skeptic, aren't you?
No, but he's just a good key forward. He's a good player, right? I think he's the best contested mark in the competition.
Well, if you're a good key forward and the best contested mark in the competition, and you've won a Coleman Medal, I think you're better than good.
Absolutely. But I'm just saying, I don't think he's turned a corner because he's always been a very good key forward. Let's put the word very in front of it then. But he could win a Coleman this year.
Yeah.
He won it 3 seasons ago. We know that. He had a really strong preseason. He was really good against Brisbane, as you said. But he's still shanked a footy. He can spray a footy more than anyone else in the competition. That doesn't mean he's not a good key forward. He is. You know who I liken him to?
Who's that?
Travis Cloak, a modern-day Travis Cloak. Best contested mark, really good from outside 50, but gets a bit shaky the closer he is to goal.
I think there are a lot of key forwards that are a little like that, though.
But people just highlight the really bad shanks, and they just focus on that. They don't really focus on his good. And this is what I'm saying. He shanked the footy last week. He's going to shank it tonight, and he's going to shank it next year. It doesn't make him not a good key forward. I think he just is who he is. I think Carlton have embraced him. I think the footy world just need to embrace who he is. He's a good key forward, but I don't think there's a corner to be turned.
Well, I think for a lot of forwards, particularly key forwards, and key forwards that have had these sort of mental demons to overcome, confidence plays an enormous factor, and I don't think you can underestimate that. So for Harry Mackay to come out and kick 3 in the opening round, and I say opening round not because it was opening round, but opening round in the true sense of it was the first round of the year. He's never done that before. In his career, he's never kicked 3 in the first game of the season. So I know it's only 3; it's not 8, but it's good. It's great for his confidence. Add in the fact that he kicked them all straight, and he won the game for his club with that with his shot with 80 seconds to go, however long there was left in the game. That just gives you so much confidence moving forward as a player. And I spoke to George Hewitt after the game, and he could not have been more proud of what Harry has done in the off-season. I think we sort of expect these guys to just be taking shot after shot after shot. He was saying, Harry and Charlie, both of them, the amount of work they put in together, they both keep pushing each other to get better and better with that. And it's the goal kicking and that accuracy, which is the most important thing. So I'm not saying he's not going to shank one for the rest of the year. Every player in the comp will shank a footy at some point this year. But I think he has turned the corner. I really think he has. Because even if you go back to his Coleman medal winning year, he wasn't an accurate kick for goal. He wasn't a reliable kick.
But that's now, what I mean. He's not turning the corner, though.
Why not?
I don't understand. The phrase turning the corner just doesn't make sense to me. He just is who he is, right? We all focus on those absolute howlers.
But why do
but
you
he
think...
Al- he's always been a good key forward, right?
Yeah, but he could be, but he's better now. Why can't he be better now and a more reliable, accurate set shot now?
He's still shanking the footy.
But he didn't.
But I'm just saying, he has. When are you saying he hasn't shanked the footy?
He kicked still... the ball against...
That last shot was great against Brisbane last week.
He kicked... Every kick he had was against Brisbane looked really good. He looked a more confident player against the Lions. He took his chances. I think he missed one, but it wasn't a bad shot for goal. And it's not just the accuracy. It's the confidence in taking the ball, going back on his mark and lining it up and kicking a drop punt. There isn't the indecisiveness of whether I should snap it, whether I should play on, whether I should pass it, whatever it is. I really think this could be a turning point for him.
Yeah, but he's doing what a good key forward should do, and I think he's going to continue to do that. But as I said before, people make a mountain out of a molehill to all the Carlton fans that are listening. Just stop focusing on the howlers. He's a very good key forward, but he's still going to shank the footy. We're going to see that maybe tonight.
We're going to see it.
Throughout the season as well. But we're going to talk about the Suns now, Jake. Mm. It's only one win to start the season, but do you think they're a legitimate finals chance in 2024?
Yes, I do. I really like the Suns. I was lucky enough to watch them firsthand against the Tigers.
Like
now,
top eight, you're saying top eight, they'll make it.
Unless we're looking back at the Essendon situation where Carlton got in from ninth, yes, they will be top eight to play finals. So I think this is the best list they've ever had. As good as Gary Ablett was, and he was as good as two great players when he was on song, I don't think they've had this depth and so many ticks across the board and such a strong midfield group at any point throughout club history. We spoke about it last week on Red Time. I think Matt Rowe was the player of the round last week, 20 clearances. That was just phenomenal the way in which he played. You know, he is someone who started so well, had that little bit of dip in production, but there's no reason why he cannot be one of the, if not the best, contested ball-winning clearance players. He doesn't need to get 30-plus every game. He'll probably average out to be a low 20 disposal-type player, but he can give you 10 clearances a game because so much of the ball he wins is contested. Noah Anderson was phenomenal last year and, again, just picked up where he left off.
Yep.
Tuke Miller, another one who, you know, second in the Brownlow, then had a down year with dealing with injuries and comes back. And I think he can have a great year as well. Sam Flanders, we've spoken about at various points. His emergence last year. Braden Fiorini, I really like on the wing. And I just think there's so much more now to work with this club. But the other part of it is, and I've always been not a coaching skeptic, but almost I'll believe it when I see it. And I know it's only one game, and I know we don't want to overreact to any of these points that we're going to talk about. But the fact that Damien Hardwick has come into this club and found a new way to win, and he hasn't relied on what made his Richmond team so successful, yep, shows to me how good of a coach he actually is.
Yeah.
It was the totally contrasting game style. It was all about, let's focus on the players we have and their strengths.
Yeah.
It was all about clearance. It was all about that contested ball. Now, yes, it is only one game, and the caveat is he coached that side for a long time, so he knows a lot about them. But I think the fact that he hasn't just gone in and said, right, we're going to Matt Rowe, we want you running and linking up with handball. It's not his style, right? So I think there's so much to work with here.
Which is what he was good at Richmond, was just playing to his own player's strength.
Exactly. And that's how coaching should be. It shouldn't just be, here's how I want to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to try and mold players into certain things. Because it doesn't work like that. It can work, you know, if the stars align, it can work. But it doesn't, no matter how good your system is, if you don't have the right players to play in that system, it's not going to work. So I give him a massive tick for round one. And of course, they probably wanted that game to be over by three quarter time and had a little bit of a scare with Richmond's comeback. But it is the first round of the year. There is going to be sort of a few teething problems. Now, do I think they're going to beat Adelaide this weekend? I'm not 100% sure about that.
If they do, then these talks become even more realistic.
They will. But they will. I'm not 100% sure. I think that game could go either way. I think I'm going to go with Gold Coast.
Yep.
But I think that one could go either way. And no matter the result of it, I'm not really changing on my opinion. I think Gold Coast will be a side well and truly in contention for the top eight right the way through. And I think they're not going to finish fourth or fifth, but I think they're a definite chance to be seventh or eighth.
I think it's too early to say. Obviously, as you said, I can see them being that 10-win team and in contention for the top eight for most of the season. I think what helps them this year is they've got a pretty generous fixture. I think they get North Melbourne, Richmond and West Coast twice. If everything goes to plan, they win those six games. You might only need another six for the rest of the season
exactly
to
You've
potentially
already got
make
half
the top eight.
Yeah.
So, look, that's one way of looking at it. I just don't think they're that trustworthy yet. I mean, only eight teams can make the finals, right? I mean, who are they better than? There's so many teams that can make the top eight this year. I need a bigger sample size before I can say, yeah, they're going to finish in the top eight this year. I still don't trust them.
So how big of a sample size? If they go and beat Adelaide
by four goals,
what's your take
then
there?
It becomes interesting. But I still want to see a month of footy before I get carried away.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. And I you know, for a side that has never done it
because
before.
Because of where they've come from, yeah.
And we've seen Gold Coast has been a side, throughout its existence, really. That's played its best footy at the start of the year and faded out of seasons. But I do think this is the best list the club's had. And I think they're in a great position to go on and play finals this year.
Win a flag in 24?
They're not winning a flag. I mean, come on.
Just asking.
Brody Grundy. What, speaking of players that had a great debut, Brody Grundy last week for Sydney dominated the game against his former side and really beat Max Gawn in the ruck duel. Begs the question, is he Sydney's most important player in 2024?
I'm going to say yes, he is. And we spoke about him last week, and I think people have forgotten what kind of player he was.
Sorry, so you need a sample size on Gold Coast, but you're happy for a one-game sample on Brody Grundy to say he's the their most important player.
I'm glad you are. So let me get to the stats, Jakey Michaels. So as I said, all Australian player at the Pies, 18 and 19. Let's look at his last half decade, last five seasons between 2019 and 2024. All ruckman rankings. In that period, he's second for rankings points, third for hitouts and hitouts to advantage, fourth best for clearances, second for contested possessions, fifth for score involvement. So we know what kind of player
he
is.
So this is post his two All-Australians?
This is between 2019 and 2024. So that's, it's one of those seasons. Yeah. But looking at his actual influence in the sides that he plays in, Collingwood in 2020, 2021, with Grundy playing, were plus 127 contested possessions, minus 49 clearances for those two seasons. And the Pies in 2022 to this year, without Grundy, obviously, minus 236 contested possessions, minus 104 clearances. It's a massive drop-off. Now, that was obviously under a different regime, under Buckley, in a completely different game style with Craig McRae. They've won a premiership, obviously, so it's not going to matter to them too much. But you look at the change in Sydney as well, 2022 to 2023, they were minus in both contested possessions and clearances. And in opening round last week, they won the contested possession count and they were plus 11 in clearances against Melbourne, who are one of the best clearance differential teams in the competition.
Yep.
They did that last week without Cullen Mills, without Luke Parker and without Taylor Adams. Mm-hmm. That tells me that a lot of that has to come down to the player that Brody Grundy is and the influence he's already had at the Swans. Now, it's only one game and I do get that. But we all know what kind of player he is. He's not just a tap ruckman. He can act as a different midfielder. He's got good foot skills when he kicks the footy. He's
suspect.
Good link-up player. Gets involved in all the change. And he's got great running capacity as well. I just think he's a really high-impact ruckman. And that, to me, I'm not afraid of saying he's Sydney's most important player in 2024.
I don't agree with the he's a reliable or good has good kick foot. Foot skills or whatever
he can kick a footy.
I wouldn't want him kicking for goal with my life on the line.
Would you rather him or Harry McKay kicking for goal?
Depends where it is, but maybe Harry. He's turned the corner, someone smart said. I think you've sold me on this. I think you've convinced me. It doesn't happen often, but you know, I'm just thinking about this and going through the players. Now, Sydney's got a lot of talent on their list, right? Just a few names here. Warner, Goulden, Parker, Mills, Papley, Heaney,
yep.
Blakey.
They're stacked with talent.
They've got a lot of... but there's a big difference, though, between great player, best player, and most important or most valuable player.
Yep.
All of those players might be better than Brody Grundy as footballers.
In terms of technical ability,
important?
Yeah.
I don't know. I reckon you might be onto something here. And it's not like he went out... And it's context is very important. It's not like he went out and... you know, beat up on a poor side that has no recognised ruckman.
It's arguably the best midfield in the comp, a lot of people say.
100%. Yeah. He's gone out there with a depleted midfield around him against the player that everyone has said has been the premier ruck in the competition for the last at least half decade. And he well and truly smashed him.
Yeah.
And his side won the game. Now, I think... there's obviously, he has a bit of the intel of having played at the club, so he knows a few of Gawn's tricks and the midfield and stuff, but I think you've convinced me. I'm not against the idea of Brody Grundy being Sydney's most important player. If he plays to that level or close to it throughout the year, I think they're more likely to be a top six side than if you said Errol Goulden had a year where he won the Brownlow and he was phenomenal. Yeah. I think you're going to get more out of... and it's not just Goulden. It's the same with Warner or Parker or any of those guys. I think what he can do is... you know, that's going to hold Sydney in much greater stead for the year than anybody else.
Yep. And we'll see how he goes throughout the rest of the season. But obviously, potentially an All-Australian. Again, that would be a great story if he was to do that with his third club.
Well, if they were doing the All-Australian now, he's in.
Jeez, that's a big call, isn't it, after one game. Speaking of the All-Australian, who will be the player that makes that surprising AA case this season? Now, credit to you, because I know who your player is, and you're not just saying this after his game last week. You've been talking up about him all season,
yeah,
all pre-season.
I'm really disappointed. We were going to do this question last week, and we didn't for whatever reason. We had too many other topics and things to talk about, so we thought, we can park that one for a week. And sure enough, he goes out and has a blinder. Brent Daniels. I love this guy. I love what he brings to a footy club. He is so skilled with ball in hand. He's a phenomenal attacking player, and he's a great defensive forward as well. So I got a few numbers on him. I think he can have a great season. So he went out first game against the Pies, 22 disposals, 4 goals, and you know, that sort of a game is not okay. He's not going to have 22 and 4 every week. But he's the type of guy that can win quite a bit of the ball, and he can hit the scoreboard each week, goal assists as well.
But so, what does he need to that small forward position in the All-Australian team? Yeah. I mean, you've got Toby Green and Charlie Cameron.
You've really only
down on that position, yeah.
You've only got two. They generally will put half forwards, will be midfielders that they'll put there at the half forward flanks. So you've got two. And unless there's a third that dominates and they might get a spot on the bench, you are really fighting for two spots. And a lot of people will say Toby Green's got one of them already locked up before the season started. He's fighting for the other spot against guys like Charlie Cameron, etc.
Well, so, after round one, he's probably got that forward pocket spot.
Well, I'm sure he probably does. So he's a few little things on Brent Daniels. He's the only general forward in the comp to rank elite, which is top 10%. In these areas.
Of your specific position.
Yeah.
Yep.
Score assists, score involvements, forward half pressure acts, and disposals over the last 2 years. So that shows me he's the only one to do it, but he does everything. You know, a lot of players will check two or three of those four boxes. Toby Green, phenomenal. Checks all the scoring boxes. Not a great defensive player. Like the numbers will say he's not. He doesn't need to be, but Brent Daniels is. He does all of those things. He's the fourth highest rated general forward over the last 2 years behind Dustin Martin, Toby Green and Dylan Moore. Dylan Moore may be a surprising name there, but the other two guys certainly not. And just ranking top five for everything that he does. Now, I think he's going to be even better this year. He's getting more opportunities, playing in a better side that will have more of the ball forward of centre. I think he can kick 40 goals for the year. I said this at the start of the year and people kind of looked at me funny. He's kicked four already.
Does 40 goals get him in the team?
I think 40 goals, if he gets 40 goals, I would be stunned if he averaged anything under sort of 14, 15 disposals. If you're averaging 15 disposals a game and kicking 40, you're a massive chance to make the All-Australian team, especially if you're doing it in a good side.
Yeah.
But it's, as I said, it's not just the winning the ball and the kicking the goals. It's the defensive stuff too. He may get to the end of the year and be a top two or three half forward, general forward for pressure.
I don't mind it. Big call, but this is what it's about. I love the big calls on this show,
Jake. Well, it doesn't seem as big anymore after that first game.
No, it doesn't. You're lying. You only said that this week, I know.
And you can read a little bit more about those thoughts on 6 points this week, which went out. I did speak about Brent Daniels on there.
You did? I'm going to go to another interstate team. You know I'm a big fan of this guy, Jake.
Yep.
In 2022, it was Andrew Brayshaw who broke out in that Dockers midfield and made the All-Australian team. Last year, it was Caleb Sarong. And in 2024, it's going to be Hayden Young. I love this boy. I reckon he's a ripping footballer. We know he's developed off a half-back flank, elite kicking skills.
Mm.
We saw in the last month of last season, Justin Longmuir threw him into the middle and got his CBAs up. And he looked at home. But now with the full preseason training as a pure midfielder, I think he's going to break out and have a really big season this year. I mean, he's an absolute weapon. For all defenders last year, he actually ranked second for total tackles as well. So he does the nitty-gritty stuff too. He can go and win his own ball, rated elite for clearances, inside 50s and metres gained.
Yeah.
I just think this guy is a terrific footballer. He's a really damaging player, tough on the inside. He's got the kicking skills, as I said, and I'm not going to be surprised if we do see his name in the AA squad at the end of the year.
I'd be stunned.
To lock down. I know there's a lot of star midfielders in the comp, but this guy's going to have a really good season.
So, yeah, I would be shocked. We spoke about Daniels before and how it's, you know, there's two ways to look at it. It's hard to get in as a general forward because you've only really got two spots, maybe a third if you've got the bench.
Yep.
But how many general forwards how many good general forwards are there in the game? There's not that many.
No.
How many good midfielders are there in the game?
A lot.
There's a lot. So you got more spots, but you got so much more competition. Last year, Lachie Neale won the Brownlow medal. He didn't get into the All-Australian team.
Yep, fair enough.
Hayden Young is not getting anywhere near the All-Australian team this year. I'm not dismissing what you're saying about him.
I think he's the surprise player.
I think he can be a good player.
Yep.
He's not going to be... For him to do it, not only... He would need to be, you know, surpass Brayshaw and Sarong significantly.
I don't think that's out of the question. I think that is a highly talented player.
You know, Sarong was a...
Terrific footballer.
Sarong, I think, was 23 or 24 Brownlow votes last year.
Yep.
Andy Brayshaw, you know, 30 or around about that mark the year before. That's not happening.
I can't wait to revisit this in 25 weeks, Jake.
I'll put $100 on it right now that Hayden Young...
Where's my wallet?
I'll put $100 on it right now Hayden Young isn't in the All-Australian team. I'll give you $100 if he's in it. If he's not in it, you got to give me $5. You taking that bet?
Absolutely, I'm taking that
bet. All right, done.
Gamble responsibly, folks.
The Cats, we finally get to see them in action. Better or worse than last year, Geelong? What do you think?
I think they'd want to be better. I mean, we talk about them every single season and we regurgitate the same stuff. 11 players over 30 years of age this year. It's the most in the competition. They were the most last year.
But it was last year.
it's most seasons we say this, as I said, and most seasons they still continue to really front up. Look, they're a good team, an experienced team, as we just said. Terrific forward line, elite forward line. Mm. You know, Tom Hawkins, Jeremy Cameron and Ollie Henry, they combined for nearly 50% of their goals last year. They're really...
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
I think it's both. I think it's both because Ollie Henry's only, 21 years old? So as that third tall coming through, I think it's a good thing. And they got 20-plus goals out of, you know, Brad Close and Tyson Stengel as well.
Yep.
Strong behind the ball, obviously. It's just their midfield that kind of worries me. I think they're a little bit thin. There's no Cam Guthrie there for the start of the season. If you take Dangerfield out, I know it's easy to say take him out. He's a star of the competition. But you're going to have to get games into Tanner Bruin, which they're going to do, Jai Clark. These are good young players that they're going to need to blood. Yeah. And I like the fact that they do need to play him this season. I just think when they come up against the more established midfields in the competition, they may be found out. Now, last year, they ranked 12th for contested possessions and 14th for clearances. So it's not like the midfield is already a strength of theirs. And they're without Guthrie again. I'm going to ask you...
I think their midfield is... It's not better than what it was.
No, it's not.
In fact, you could argue it's going to be worse because Dangerfield is still their most important player when he's playing in there and he's another year older. So I think it's clearly the forward line and the defence get...
It's fine. They get ticks.
They get ticks. Yep. The midfield is a glaring weakness at the moment.
How many away games do you think off the top of your head they won last year?
Have absolutely no idea. I'm going to say 3.
2.
Yeah.
Which is the same as Gold Coast and Hawthorn. So... I'm just looking at this and looking at the teams around them. They went from a premiership to 12th. I need to, what gives them the edge over these other middling teams? So Adelaide were brutally stiff not to make finals last year. The Bombers we spoke about last week, they recruited really, really well. St Kilda maybe around the mark as well. The Dogs are way too talented not to be there. Port Adelaide recruited well. They're not going to just rely on that internal growth.
Yeah.
I can just find a reason. The Suns with that easier fixture. I mean, we spoke about them too. That's 6 teams I've just reeled off that I can find a reason why they're going to improve.
Not to mention the other 6 to 8 that you know are going to be better.
Exactly. So I understand that the Cats have, you know, the veterans of Stewart, Dangerfield, Hawkins and Cameron. That could hold them in pretty good stead if they can all stay healthy. But
the thing
as
is,
much as they're experienced and seasoned, I can still see them slipping away and falling into that bottom 6 and potentially finishing lower than 12th for the first time in their history.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Experience holds you in good stead until it doesn't. And what I mean by that is, you know, everyone loves to talk about all their experience. You know, this team's no good because they got no experience. They're inexperienced. Yep. This team is. That's all well and good until you're just too old and you're not good anymore. Mm. And I'm not saying that's what the Cats are going to be this year, but at some point they will fall off that cliff. We know it's going to happen, and we already got signs of it happening last year. Do I think Geelong's going to be a better team than they were last year? No. Do I think they're going to be significantly worse? No.
Yeah.
I think they're kind of around where they're going to be around that same spot again. And when I did my preseason tiers and ranked every team going into the year, I had Geelong on their own little tier by themselves because for that same reason, I find them very difficult to rank. And I think the bottom is going to fall out of this side sooner rather than later. And To answer the question of will they be better or worse, they could finish the year with the same amount of wins, the same ladder position, 12th, and I would still say they're in a worse position because Dangerfield's a year older, Hawkins is a year older, maybe gone, and you know they need to address this midfield issue because I think I'm a big believer that midfield, as good as your forward line and their defense may be, I'm a big believer that midfields win games of footy. And I don't think their current midfield is good enough to win many games of footy.
To steal a quote from you from last week, closer to the bottom six than they are the top four, I would say.
Oh, absolutely.
None of those ends would actually surprise me with them. But as I said before, I can find reasons, more reasons for these other teams than I can.
Yeah, they're not going to be top four.
From the Cats, we go over to the West and West Coast. Jake, should Harley Reid start in the first centre bounce for the Eagles this week?
He should, and I'd be very disappointed if he didn't. There's so much expectation and hype around Harley Reid, I can't wait to watch him play.
I think most people would take that stance as well. There hasn't been a more hyped player, has there, come through the ranks as Harley Reid, leading into his first ever game?
I think it can be a little bit of recency bias. I mean, he's certainly up there. I seem to remember, you know, another West Coast player, Chris Judd, the hype around him when he got drafted, although he, you know, he wasn't a number one pick. So the number one pick alongside your name does carry that little extra weight as well. And you do, you know, with that, you go into a struggling side. I don't see why West Coast should or would want to ease Harley into the game or into the season even. He should be starting. He's their marquee player. He has been the best player on every team he's ever played in up until this point. And, you know, who knows? We might watch him after a couple of games and think, geez, the best player on West Coast. But I think it would be crazy to start him at half back or half forward or on a wing or wherever. I think the first bounce of the season for West Coast, you want him in the guts, in the middle, and you want him learning. It's not, there's no benefit to not to putting him somewhere else on the ground. You've got to get him around the ball from the start. It's going to fast track his development as a professional. And if he is as good as everyone seems to think he is, then why would you not want to have this guy around the ball?
I think when you look at what Collingwood did with injecting Nick Dacos into the team and starting him in the back line, and North Melbourne doing the same with Harry Sheasel. Can you see the Eagles doing the same thing with Harley Reid? I mean,
I think there's a big chance that they will, but I don't think they should because I think it's a different situation. I think Sheasel is a different Sheasel is a different build to
they're
Harley Reid.
They're more your class, right, on the outside. Harley Reid's a bullocking midfielder, powerful midfielder.
So Sheasel, not the same build as Harley Reid. I was standing next to him on draft night, and I couldn't believe the size of this guy for his age. It's just crazy.
Could you take him?
I could not take him. And then, you know, Nick Dacos, obviously another one. You know, he's a much smaller player as well. But with Dacos, it was different because they had players in the midfield. They didn't need to get him in there straight away. West Coast don't have that luxury of having all their midfield littered with stars.
Yeah.
I would be getting him in there as soon as you can. I don't understand the desire or the want to ease players in, especially when you've got nothing in there as it is, with all due respect to the current West Coast midfield.
Yeah, I think I can see Adam Simpson just going with the Ruben Jimby, Tim Kelly and Elliot Yeo midfield potentially.
Would you be surprised if he went in and by round eight we were saying he's their best midfielder?
No, not at all.
Yeah.
Speaking of surprise AA selections... Could you see that happen?
I think he's more of a chance than Hayden Young.
You're a joke.
But he's not going to make it. Neither of them are going to make it. Last question for the day. And I've got to put the caveat out there on this one, that this was one you wanted in here, not me. I think this is a ridiculous question, but I'm going to ask it anyway. So blame him. Will Aaron Norton and Jamara Ugle-Hagan end the year as the best key forward combo in the league?
You've thrown me under the bus there.
I haven't.
I think there's a world that exists where we're looking at them as the best key forward combination in
there's
the competition by the end of
2024. There's a world that exists in a
parallel... So I'm not wrong.
We could be the best key forward in a world that exists.
Correct. So we're not wrong.
You're off your rocker here.
No. I do believe... I'm not saying they're better than Mackay and Kurnow right now. You're taking Hawkins and Cameron over them, obviously. And this is a potential type of question here. Look, they're both terrific marks overhead, great aerial threats. Norton, 83 scoring shots over the past three seasons as an average. Ugle-Hagan had 93 last season, albeit it was only for 35 goals. So he has had his goal kicking issues in his first couple of seasons in the game.
Yeah.
But again, it screams potential. Now, of the top 10 players last season for shots at goal, there were only two teams that had a pair of players in that top 10. It was Geelong with Hawkins and Cameron, mm-hmm. and the Bulldogs with Yugal Hagen and Aaron Norton. I just think with a star-studded midfield that they have, they're going to get a lot of supply, a lot of entries. I think they're going to have the opportunity to really take that next step this season as a combination. Remember, Yugal Hagen is in a contract year. He has every reason to try and perform out of his skin. Yep. I just can't... I'm not going to flat out say, yep, they're the best in the competition.
Good.
But there is absolutely a chance that they can be by the end of 2024. I don't think that's...
I think they can be by the end of 2026 if they persist with Norton as a...
If Yugal Hagen's still at the Dogs too.
Well, if he's still at the Dogs and if Norton is still a forward. I mean, people forget that Aaron Norton was, you know, not even was, but probably is a better defender than he is a forward. But if he stays as a forward and they remain together, I think they can kind of enter this group in the next 24 months.
Who are you taking ahead of them?
I'm taking a lot of combos ahead of me. I'm taking Hawkins and Cameron, you said.
Right now,
Mackay,
yes.
Mackay and Kerno. I'm taking Danaher and Hipwood. I'm taking King and Lukosius. I'm taking Dixon and Marshall, Allen and Darling. And I'm even taking, if you want to call Zerha this type of player, I'm taking Larky and Zerha.
You're taking the mickey
I
with
think,
some of these,
you know,
Jake.
there's a lot of combos you can throw up that...
There aren't, but...
No, there are,
go
and I just
it.
Did. And I think you can, of those combos, there's three or four that are clearly ahead of them right now.
Right now, yes.
That I think you would agree.
Yep.
Then there's another five to six
that they're in the group with.
So, at best, they might be fourth. At worst, they might be eighth or ninth.
Of that group, they have the most potential out of any of them, I would say. You're allowed to disagree and you're allowed to be wrong.
Yeah, no, they probably do. Yeah. They probably do, given their age profile and what they've done. I don't disagree with that. But I think it's a tall order for them to finish this season as the best 1-2 punch in the comp.
Well, I disagree. Let's look out for those two players this season. Guys, that's all we have time for Red Time for this week. Enjoy the footy and we'll speak to you on the next episode.
Thanks for joining us on the ESPN Footy Pod. Make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.